Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we take you down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be, with conversations from those who paved the way. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Peach State Pandemonium.
And welcome to Peach State Pandemonium for November the 1st, 2012. This is Michael Norris, and I am joined by Bobby Simmons. And a surprise for us, we weren't expecting him to be with us, but that the old wrestler came out at him that he had to make the shot, and Jerry Oates is with us. So welcome both you guys. Jerry, I'm so thrilled that you're on with us.
Well, I'm going to hang as long as I can, guys. Thank you.
He'll be ready to make a comeback in about 6 months, Bobby.
Do we have to refer to him as the bionic Jerry Oates now, or can we still just call him Jerry?
I'll tell you what, guys. This is something that you wouldn't just run down on a Monday and decide, I think I don't have anything to do. I'm going to get me a couple of knees. Don't do it. Please.
Oh, hold me first. Get on him, huh?
Hold me first. Man.
Well, just think, Jerry, a year from now, you won't even need your scooter. You'll be able to run up and down the beach and run people off.
Well, I tell you what, I hope you're right, Mike Norris. I hope you're right. I hope you're correct.
I got all the faith in the world in you, my boy. You're going to come through this with flying colors.
Well, I hope so, guys. I just hope y'all never have to have it done, that's all. But anyhow, enough of me.
Only thing I'll need to ever need to be replaced will be a brain, and they won't be able to find one. It'll be compatible with my twisted personality. That's work,
but I was going to say they'd have to take a baby to fit that cavity. So you know, we.
That's what I was saying.
Oh man, well,
it's good when we can admit our own faults, and
yes, it is.
And most of them are true.
Well, and since the last time we've been on the air, unfortunately, we have lost two big names in the wrestling business. Mike Graham 2 weeks ago, tomorrow, and this morning, Brad Armstrong. So I really didn't have anything planned tonight, but I think I want to talk a little bit about Mike in the first segment, and then at 8:30 we're going to be joined by Tom Pritchard, who's probably one of Brad Armstrong's closest friends, and we're basically just going to remember Brad and you know what I told Bobby Jerry is this somebody that kept themselves in as well as condition as Brad did, and then somebody like yourself. Passed away at the age of 51 of a heart attack. It's just
it's mind-boggling. It
you
really
just never
is.
Never know. Hmm. But before we get into all that, I just want anybody that's listening to keep Brad's wife Lori, his daughter Jillian, and of course his parents Bob and Gail, and his brothers Steve, Scott, and Brian. Keep that family in your thoughts and prayers, because I just Bobby's been through it with losing a brother. He knows what it's done to his parents. I lost a brother 6 years ago at the exact same age as Brad, 51. I know what that did to my parents. I just cannot imagine a parent losing a child. It boggles my mind.
Not the way it's supposed to be, is it?
No. Mike Graham, dear, you were around Mike, so you broke in Florida about the same time he did, didn't you?
I was a little ahead of him. I saw him some, not a whole lot, and I'd run into him sometimes when he'd be here in Georgia or I'd go back to Florida. That was my only run-ins with Mike. I don't know how many territories he ever worked, which is understandable, but. He was a good hand now. I think he was.
Yes, he was. You know, a lot of people lump him in with you know, the George Phillipses of the world and think that the only reason he was a star in Florida was because of his dad. Well, let me tell you, he had a legitimate amateur background. He was taking college, you know, amateurs at the age of 13. And he was a power lifter. I mean, I think the only thing, and Bobby and I have talked about this before, his lack of size is the only thing that held him back. But he was a tremendous worker.
He was. And I think that's why he didn't really venture out any further. It is because of his size. But, you know, his daddy wasn't a big guy either. But, he was talented beyond belief and had a mind on him that was just, you know, second to none. And those things, then, you know, it changes. But Mike or Bobby, either one of y'all know where other places he went.
The only place I ever knew he worked was Georgia and Florida. That's the only places I ever seen.
That's the only places I ever saw him.
He did shots, you know, up back in the early 70s when he was. It wasn't uncommon for people who were well known in other territories to do shots up in Madison Square Garden, and he did that. He did a couple of shots in Madison Square Garden, I think teaming with Eddie. Of course, Florida TV at that time was being piped into New York City, so people were aware of him. I think he worked in Boston, you know, they were just one or two shots. The only other territory that I know he worked out of at a fairly regular pace was right towards the end of the AWA. He was, of course, that was, you know, Florida was done by that time, but he was working for Byrne. He was helped their world light heavyweight champion. But I never did understand why Mike, and it may have been his own choice, he may have been approached and maybe decided he didn't want to do the traveling, because in fact, the world junior heavyweight champion traveled almost as much as the world heavyweight did, but he would have been an excellent world heavyweight champion.
He would. And maybe he was smart enough to know that because of his height, that, you know, I don't know. I really don't know. I could never answer that, but he definitely was talented.
You're talking about his amateur background, Mike. A little story that I heard last year in Vegas, and it was told by Ricky Steamboat. Ricky Steamboat's real name is Richard Blood, and Mike wrestled Richard Blood in the state high school championship, or for the state high school championship, and Mike beat him. But Eddie was so impressed with him that a couple of years later, Ricky said he was selling vacuum cleaners door to door. And he said that he called Vern. He decided he saw Mike on TV or something, and he called Vern because he had heard Vern had a school up there. And Vern asked him his name, and he told him it was Richard Blood. And Vern says, "I know you." And he said, "Well, how do you know me?" He said, you've never seen me. I've never been up there." He said, "I know you because Eddie Graham told me you were a heck of an amateur wrestler and you would be a good professional and you were a good-looking kid." So that's how Ricky got into the camp up at Vern's.
And that's he was lucky, wasn't he?
Yeah, Richard. That odd name of Richard Blood, it stuck in Eddie's mind. And he told Vern about him and just in conversation. And that's how that came about.
That's unbelievable.
And of course, Mike, I think at the same high school, in Bob Orton Jr., under Bob Jr. traveled quite a bit because of his father's career, but I think at one point he was amateur in Florida as well. And, of course, Dick Slater, Steve Kern, all those guys, you know, were around that same time frame. Dennis McCord, who later became Austin Idol. All those guys were close friends of Mike's at one time or another growing up. So that's how that led into, you know, all those guys getting into business. Not a bad talent in any of those names.
No, it's not.
You wonder, because of the circumstances of his death, what was on somebody's mind, but you just never know. Of course, when Bobby first called me and told me, it was the first thing that hit my mind was, I hope it's not the same as his dad went out, but as it turned out, it was, and it's just not a good situation, but hopefully whatever drove him to it, he's at peace now, and he was a talented guy. I tell you, I saw him several times when I was still at Tampa, and at the beginning of his career and later on, and he always got better to me. I never saw a size difference. He could work with Pac Song, and I would never notice that he was that good a worker to me.
But thank you. He just, you know, and I just hope that, you know, that, I mean, I nobody knows what anybody would do something like that. But I always heard he was doing well, you know, financially all right, you know. And I don't, you know, I hope that wasn't the case.
Yeah, but you know, you just never know how things are. But anyway, Bobby, you were around him when he came through Georgia, I guess.
Yeah, I refereed a lot of his matches when he was here. Nice guy. I mean, he was, you know. I heard you know, you talked about people kind of grouped him in with George Gula. Yeah, you know, that was the furthest thing from the truth with Mike. Mike was not only a good worker, he was liked by, I mean, I didn't ever hear anybody say anything bad about him. And nobody minded working with him. And there was never any of this, well, my daddy's this or my daddy's that. You know, Mike worked hard. And, you know, Eddie was such a good businessman. Now, Eddie, of course, would protect his son. But Eddie had Matt Suda train him, and I doubt very seriously if Matt Suda took it easy on him.
No, he did not fit in that category at all.
No, not at all.
Not from what I knew, Bobby. Not from what I knew.
He would come in here and stay, you know, 2-3 weeks or a month, and this, like you say, Mike, this was the time, you know, that maybe Slater was here or Jerry Briscoe was here or, you know, there was that crew that ran out of Florida, and he would come in here and stay a while. He never stayed a long time, but. Always very pleasant and always fun to be around. He just, I'm like you guys. You know, the only two people that know what happened is the good Lord and Mike, and neither one of them are talking.
Right.
And we can speculate and, you know, but just who knows. I just hate it. I hate it.
Yeah, I do too. You know, and just always had seemed to be an upbeat person and everything. You just never know what's going on in a person's heart. So I know he and Eddie were the Georgia Tag Team Champions during the split, right, or right after the split, because a lot of that Florida crew came up. And did you ever get a chance to see them, or because you were so busy with Gunkel, I guess?
I don't know that I ever saw them work as a team. I was never in the ring with Eddie. Eddie had pretty much retired by 74 when I went over to Barnett. I mean, he would, I think maybe in Florida he might have did a few things, but he was not doing much at all. I don't ever remember him working here after I came over. Or if he did, I wasn't there.
Mike, Mike never did anything in the Gulf Coast?
No, never came
That's
in the
strange,
Gulf Coast.
That's strange, isn't it? Close as he was.
Yes. Actually, a lot of people don't realize the Gulf Coast was Steve Kern's first territory. He came in at the end of 73 and stayed about two and a half months or so. Eddie had called Lee and said that he had a young guy that they had helped get in the business and everything and wanted to send him up. He worked about middle of the card to begin with. And, in fact, on the Dothan side, he and Rick Gibson were the U.S. Tag Team Champions. They had a thing with – yeah. They had a thing, but it was only on the Dothan, Panama City, and that Steve would work prelims in Mobile, but they did a thing with Curtis Smith and Mike McManus, who were the Infernos at that time. And I think they were they were their infernos were actually working in Georgia, but they would had Friday nights off or whatever, so they would come over to for the Dover show. And like they said, they kept it at that end, and they swapped the title back and forth. In fact, this year at the reunion, Robert Gibson was there, and he had a photo out that belonged to his and Ricky's mom, and there was a picture in there of Ricky and Steve with the U.S. belts that I would love to get my hands on. But, yeah, this was Mobile was one of was Steve Kern's first territory. Mike never came up there. He would have been good up there because
he really would have.
Yeah, but that territory was always, you know, for smaller guys anyway. In fact, Ken Lucas, one of his rare was outside of Mobile or Tennessee, went down into Florida in 76, and he and Mike were the Florida tag team team. That was a good fit, the two of them together, because they were similar
size. That's why I was just wondering if he ever showed up and put him and Ken up together there, but evidently not.
No, and like I said, he may have, you know, he probably had a lot of outside interest down in Florida because of, you know, being pretty entrenched in there.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Like Mike said, even coming up to Georgia, they would just in and out. The longest time was when he and Eddie were there in 72-73, right after the split happened. But and there, you know, he was well known there. The trips weren't all that bad. He made decent money, I'm sure, and he was very over with the fans. So why go anywhere else, you know?
Exactly.
That's the concept a lot of people don't understand. Back in the territorial days, you know, a lot of guys moved around because they wanted to, not because they had to. You could be in a territory and really be over, and people never got tired of you. You could stay somewhere in Homestead. And, you know, you may move up and down the card where you're not the main event all the time, but, Lord, look how long Dusty was in Florida.
Well, I read a thing the other day. Bill Watts had posted a little thing on the internet about Mike, and one of the things he said was he was booking for Eddie, and he said that he put Mike in charge of Orlando, and I'm guessing this is that maybe after Milo had given it up or whatever, or was down there helping or whatever. And he said, Bill said, I did it for two reasons. He said, one, I knew Eddie wouldn't let him fail. He said, but second of all, he said it helped him learn another aspect of the business. And he was talking about how successful he was there and how hard he worked, you know, from a promotion standpoint. And, I mean, that's just, there again, that's one of the things that, you know, Jerry's talking about Eddie, how smart he was. You know, Eddie knew that, I mean, I don't think Eddie had any foresight of what he was going to do, but take his own life. But he had enough foresight to know that he wasn't going to live forever. And if nature held its course, he would go before Mike. And I honestly don't believe Eddie saw the business ever happening to it, what's happened to it now. And he was preparing Mike to you know, run the show at some point.
I'm sure he was, buddy.
Yeah.
I'm sure he was.
And like Jerry said one time, Eddie had another strong ally, had Ray Gunkel still been alive, or, you know, had Vern, had more interest in spreading out more. I don't think what happened to the business would have happened to the business.
I'll believe that to the day I die.
Their mindset was a whole lot different than people's mindsets became later on. There ain't a doubt in my mind that Eddie Graham and Ray Gunkel would have got on a plane and went to Connecticut or wherever he is up there,
Bobby,
and would have had a face-to-face.
If we're not all three talking, and you saying if that ain't the truth, and you know it would have happened.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that'd have, you know, it wouldn't have been
it wouldn't be around the bush.
Please.
That blonde-headed man would have went up there and went crazy.
He was a tough son of a gun. I know that.
I don't think he wasn't.
Good old Tennessee boy. Did you ever work with Eddie?
No, I was partners with him a couple of times when the split happened. They brought him up here, and they teamed, he and I together in Columbus. That was my only.
Were you in awe of him with the reputation that he has?
Yeah, because I started down there, and you know, I would referee. You know, before I started full time, he would let me come to Tampa and referee, and he always thought high of me, I think, because I don't know if I ever told you that story. While that split was going on, I met him on the steps. You know, the steps, Bobby, going from the basement to the other dressing room. I was always dressed downstairs.
Right, right.
And I was coming up to this, and he was coming down looking for me. And, you know, he said, I know what's going on here, but, you know, we're here, so it's going to be tough. It's going to be long and drawn out and all that. And he said, you're the perfect size guy. You can wrestle the big ones or the little ones because of your height. He said, you're right in between. And he said, I want you, when this settles down and you get ready to leave, he said, I want you to come to Florida. And I never did. And I look back thinking, well, what would have happened from that? I mean, I could have had a heck of a run down there. I mean,
yeah.
If he asked you to come, you know, I thought that was pretty impressive. But I didn't make that turn in the road.
Yeah, you think about Florida from that 1970 through 1977 or so. I think Georgia started drawing awful. Once the cable started spreading out, Georgia became more prominent in people's minds as far as the southern territories. But you think of that territory from those 7 years, from Jack Briscoe, you know, Torrey Funk Jr., that feud that was down there for a couple of years until they finally put the belt on Jack. Dusty, a babyface turn in 74, through that just went through the zenith. But you had guys like Buddy Cole. And you find some old cards from that territory back in those days, and you see Danny Hodge in the opening match. You see Vern Gagne in the opening match. And you think,
I mean,
wow.
Man, those spot shows down there had names on it that you wouldn't believe. I mean, I know what you're talking about. I've looked at some of those things, and my gosh. It was like somebody just had an imaginary card they made up with the names on it. I mean, it was unbelievable. And I'm telling you, those guys down there, man, if you needed help working, you could go down that sportatorium, and, you know, they would, Matt Suda and those guys were there. You could learn a lot in that territory because if you step, especially me, I was blessed because, I mean, when I started full time, I mean, I was in the ring with Garvin and guys like that, and guys that had a lot of experience, and that's the way you learn.
Yep.
And I was blessed in that way because no matter who you were in the card, somebody was. Especially like me, because I started out was, you know, 100 times more talented or more experienced than you had, and you didn't pick that up. But you know, it's like today. I don't know where they keep getting talent. I don't know.
I'm sure it's out there. But even if you got it, it would be so green. And who's going to teach them? Because they don't want to listen.
Well, they know more than you do. That's about two workouts.
They know everything.
But you know, you can't. You can keep somebody in a gym that has even talent, you know, month after month after month after month. But if you don't start getting in front of a crowd on a regular basis, you're kidding yourself.
Well, you know, a word that you never hear used anymore, or two words that you never hear used anymore, is crowd psychology. You know, a lot of times the crowd would dictate not what you did, but how you did it.
Right.
You know, and you know, you could manipulate a crowd.
You can make them stand up. You can make them sit down.
As a referee, I could cheerlead if I wanted to.
Exit, you go.
You know, I mean, just the faster the referee moved, sometimes the more the people got up because it looked like, you know, you were interested in it. But it was just, I don't know, Rock Hunter. I guess I learned more about that from Rock Hunter than anybody. I used to be amazed at how he could. Just with a facial contortion, could manipulate a crowd.
Just exactly. But see, that's lost, Bobby. That's lost. They wonder what kind of music they're coming out to, man.
Yeah.
Well, not that, but and you guys certainly have a whole lot more experience than I did. But you know, there's a difference in working, you know, in an empty arena versus working in one that's got a crowd in it, just on your own nerves.
Oh, yeah.
How you feel about yourself and how you're doing in it. Because I know the first, I don't know that I ever got over it, really, but especially the first several matches I ever had, I was always second-guessing myself. Did I do that right because of whatever the reaction of the crowd was? You know, if they didn't ooh or ah when I took a particular bump or something, or they didn't cheer if I was working babyface, if they didn't give me some little cheer when I started to make a little comeback or something, I wonder, am I doing this right? So, you know, it's just, and it's nerve-wracking. You guys both went through it. I never did really get over it. The nerves and the butterflies from it
I'm sure Bobby experienced this. I mean, when you come out of the ring, if he was green, I mean, the real good-hearted guys and the sincere guys, they pull you to the side, you know, say, you know, when you did this and this, you know, you could have done this, or, you know, not to cut you down or put you down, it was just to help you, you know.
To help you, by all means.
But now, you go in and tell them, hey, look at you, like, what would you know about this, sir? Really? I guess nothing. And he'd be right. I'd have to accept that answer, wouldn't I?
that's exactly right. I mean, it's the truth, and I've probably told you this before. Ted Allen got me booked in Macon. He called me and asked me, said this guy needed a referee for a show he had sold at the fair in Macon at the ballpark there during the state fair or whatever. And I said, well, who's on the card? And he told me some people, and he said, Ted Oates is in the main event. Well, I hadn't seen Ted at that time in probably 10, 11 years. And I said, well, geez, yeah, I'll go. You know, I'll go. And he told me what the guy was going to pay. So the day before the show, the guy calls me, and he goes, the referee says he won't come unless, the guy bringing the ring won't come unless he can referee. He said, but if you'll come down here and do the ring announcement, he said, I'll pay you the same money I promised you to referee. I said, Bubba, I'll be there, and I'll even wear a coat and tie. So I went down there, and they set the ring up on the pitcher's mound, and I put a chair out by second base, and I was doing the ring announcement. Then the first match went in the ring, and they was jumping off the top rope and going through tables and running around the infield chasing each other. And I was sitting there in a chair, and this little guy was promoting. Come out there, and he said, man, ain't this great? I said, well, depending on what your definition of great is. I said, it's a good thing I ain't refereeing. He said, why? I said, because I'd be standing right there in the corner of the ring counting. And I said, when I got to whatever the number was, I said, I'd be ringing the bell. I said, the match would be over.
He didn't get it either, did he?
No, he didn't. I said, this is crazy. And I asked the guy, I said, let me ask you a question, pal. I said, they coming off the top of the ring going through these tables. I said, what's the main event going to do, jump off the top of this stadium? I said, what are you going to do to top this?
They don't get it.
Well, was the referee out chasing them around the base?
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's crazy. I've never been so happy in my life to be sitting in a chair watching.
And you got paid to see that mess, too.
Oh. Ted teamed with Ted Allen that night. It worked against the Nasty Boys, Brian Knobs and whatever the other guy was.
They beat that
poor Ted with a chair unmercifully. I thought to myself, I said, man, they I don't know what he's making, but it ain't enough. I mean, this is crazy.
Well, guys, I'm going to take a quick break real quick, and when we get back, we'll get Tom Pritchard on the line, and we'll go from there. So let me just add on to a couple of bills. We'll be right back.
All right. Wrestling fans, Anarchy Wrestling television tapings are the second and fourth Saturdays of every month at 4236 Level Grove Road in Cornelia, Georgia. For more information on Anarchy Wrestling, and on the shows to watch the television product and a whole lot more, go to anarchy-wrestling.net. That's Anarchy Wrestling, the second and fourth Saturdays of every month in Cornelia, Georgia.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
Whether you're having an autograph session, personal appearance, or live event, We got just the person you need to contact for all of those needs. SBI Bookings is home of some of the best stars in the wrestling industry today. They provide you with the best talent this business has to offer, from Kevin Nash, Larry Zbysko, Scott Steiner, and many, many more. So who will you contact next time you're planning an event? The men of SBI Bookings. Check them out at sbibookings.com.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Red Gunkle or Gordon Soley? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first party you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Wrestling music back.
Thank the Lord.
And speaking of which, tomorrow is the 10th anniversary of the Georgia Wrestling History website, which is our parent company and the ones that allow us to get on the radio every Thursday and make fools of ourselves. And tomorrow's, it doesn't seem like it's been 10 years, does it, Bobby?
No, it doesn't.
Started it. And also tomorrow, they're supposed to announce the 2012 list for the 2012 Hall of Fame, Georgia Wrestling History Hall of Fame. And rumor has it that Bob and Brad Armstrong are going in as a tag team. So, which makes today even that much more poignant. So,
yes, it does.
I'm going to kind of get Tom Pritchard on the line here with us real quick. And Tom said, bear with him if he got emotional tonight. I'm sure we'll all be before it's over with, but we got a couple of guys hanging on the line that will always cheer us up. We'll get them on later on if things get to be a little too serious here, so try and get Tom on with us.
Yeah, Tom and Brad were both in Pell City Saturday night. That was Brad's last event.
Hello.
Dr. Tom.
Yes.
Hey, it's Michael Norris, Jerry Oates, and Bobby Simmons. Welcome to B-State Panama.
Hey, Michael. Hey, Sandy, could you hand me this remote, please? This remote.
Not a good reason for being on, but I do appreciate you being on and being able to join us.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I really don't want to, but I understand it. So, I mean, it's one of those things. It's just Michael and Bobby and Jerry on with us, too?
Yeah, we're here.
Yeah.
We're here, guys.
Oh, good, because I'm not sure last time. That's good. That's good. Okay. Yeah, no problem. And, are we on live now?
Yes.
We're here.
Oh. I didn't know if we were on live or off the air, guys. I'm sorry. I apologize.
That's
no problem. Yeah. Well, let's see. What kind of day have you guys had? That's right up there, huh?
It's been a rough one, buddy. It's been a rough one. Bobby was just saying before, from the time that you and Brad worked together Saturday night in Pell City, Alabama.
Well, but, you know, it's kind of more than that. It's like, I knew Brad for over 30 years, and, just real quick, we just moved to Knoxville. Actually, we're moving into our place tomorrow, but my wife and I have a cabin up here in Pigeon Forge, and we drove all night Tuesday night because the movers got there late, and we got in, and at 7:30 in the morning. So we laid down. Brad called me yesterday, actually, at 10:30, I guess it was, but my phone. And he asked if we got in all right. And, I was half asleep, but we just talked for maybe 5 minutes, and told him I'd call him back later. Well, later was this morning, about, I guess, 10:15, 10:13, 11 o'clock earlier, actually, and or my phone earlier. And he didn't answer, so I figured he was at work, and we used to play phone tag, or if he's doing something or I'm doing something, we'll get back to each other. Anyway, I guess within 3 minutes, my phone rang, and it was, you know, Brad's number came up, and I answered and said, "Brad, it was Lori, his wife." I said, "No, it's Lori." And anyway, I don't want to really go into details, but she just said she was following the ambulance, and she wasn't too sure about things. It's been an emotional day, guys.
Yeah, I imagine so. When did you first meet Brad?
Atlanta. Gosh, it was 82 or 83. I keep thinking I went to Atlanta in 82, but I was 22 years old. That's why I say that. And I turned 22, so August 18th, 1982. So I guess, I don't even know anymore, man. I mean, I'm so, as you can imagine. But I met him in Atlanta, so it's been over 30 years, and, you know, it's one of those things where you, you meet somebody and you immediately, and again, Jerry can attest to this, all the Armstrongs have that same, immediate, just sense of humor in the locker room, I want to say leaders, but they're also locker room rivers, pranksters, not malicious in any way, but... You know, they were always happy and good to have them around, good for morale, always joking, always just, it made everything so much fun, so much more fun, and that's what's missing from a lot of business today, and that was what, from Bob to Brad to Scott, Steve, Brian, all of them had that quality that was instant. And Brad was one of those guys when I met him right off the bat. Brad's 51, was 51, I'm 53, and we're people close in age. It was just an instant connection there. Even, you know, in the ring, when you get in the ring with somebody, you know how you have that chemistry, and you just, you know, the first time you ever work and you lock up, and you don't have to say anything, you don't have to do anything except just do it. It just happens, and that's the magic part of it. That was what Brad was able to do that, not just with me, but with anybody he stepped in the ring with. And I said, we just got back from a meeting, and Sandy, you know, said, "Why don't we stop at Starbucks and check your emails or check?" Because we have no internet access here, so we went and just got the Wi-Fi at Starbucks, and I said, you know, Brad was my best friend, but everybody's best friend.
He really was. I tell you, you and I are the same age, Tom. I'm also 53. I saw Brad's first match in Mobile on July 4th, 1980, and saw several matches while I was still breaking in the business, living in Mobile. And the short time I worked for Fuller, I was around him a little bit, and I didn't realize, I was thinking we were the same age. I didn't realize until today that he was actually 2 years younger than me. But he called me, right. He always called me sir.
Right. Well, but all of them did.
He was just such a great guy. And the thing about it, everybody has talked about it, it's been rampant on the internet since people found out about his passing, that the most consistent thing that everybody has said was he was probably the most underrated wrestler ever. Because
that's an understatement in itself by saying he's the most underrated. He definitely deserved a hell of a lot more credit than he ever got.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think part of that, I was so confused when he could be so entertained backstage and then come out. And he wanted to be a wrestler. You know, he wanted to be taken seriously, and he was so underrated because he was so smooth and he was so agreeable and he was so, when I say agreeable, it's like he was unselfish and he was wanted to have a great match and just go out and wrestle, man. I mean, a lot of us just want to, and then you find out later on, if you want to make it, I guess, if you want to be a millionaire in this business, you have to have that certain streak of what one of our special people, you know, we all know and love, calls ruthless aggression. And, you know, Brad had none of that. I mean, we it's a funny thing, man. Brad and I had some pretty poignant, and I want to say poignant, I guess they were, either deep discussions or just kind of to the point discussions about our times in the business. And I asked him not too long ago, you know, did you ever have the feeling or just the thought about, I mean, you get ahead, just stab somebody right in the back, or just go back. And I knew the answer, but I thought about it because I know so many people and know the way it works. I've been on both sides of the fence to listen to the way it does work. And if you want to get ahead in this business, you can be the greatest worker in the world. But if you're not willing to, to step on somebody and say, no, I deserve that spot, and push this guy aside. And, you know, as much as we don't want to believe that, I'm sorry, that's the truth, because I've seen it and I've heard it and I've watched it happen. And Brad was always one of those guys to say, yeah, go ahead, if you want to, I don't mind doing the job, I don't mind going. And problem is, Brad worked with everyone and everyone wanted to work with him because he was so damn good and he made you look so damn much better than you were, in my opinion. And he never really cared so much about himself as he did about the match and about getting the match over. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, and that was one of those talks we had where, I mean, look, we all got what we got, and we all did what we did. But at the same time, Brad worked with Flair, I remember, somewhere in Atlanta or something. I don't know if he did 60 minutes, but he did close to 60 minutes. But God dog it, man, he went out there and he hung with him, and he looked like a champion, and he was a champion. And he looked like the kind of guy, and he was natural, and the only thing missing from Brad that they all have, they being the Armstrongs, they all have that sense of they're witty, they're intelligent, but, you know, Brad was one of them when the red light came on, you know, he's always very, yes sir, and Mr. Solomon would come up to Aston. Whereas right. Brian, you know, Road Dogg would be the entertaining, you know, oh, you didn't know, and he could come up with some witty lines on camera. He lived to be on camera, but, you know, Brad could get in the ring, and he could perform, and in implicit timing, I just think he was just one of those guys that could work with anybody, didn't matter who it was, just relaxed. Let him lead you, or if you needed to, if you needed to be led, he could lead you, or if you wanted to be led and he trusted you, then, you know, you could lead him. I worked with him in Bell City last week, man, and it was, I didn't really want to wrestle, and we both said the same thing. It's like, you know, I really don't want to go in the ring with some of these guys because I don't want to get hurt. We're hurt as it is. But after the match, you know, we did what we did, and I really don't think we did that much, but we came back, and Brad kind of said, you know what, man, I kind of felt like a shell of myself out there. I said, yeah, I felt the same way. And then I heard people say, God, dog, man, you guys did more than the other guys who come in and do this stuff, and they mentioned names. I'm not going to mention any names, but they mentioned some names that came in and didn't want to do anything, and I don't think we did all that much either, but obviously, compared to the others we did. And I don't know, man. I'm rambling. It's been one of those days. It's an incredible day, guys. I broke down. I don't know how many freaking times today. I'm either cried out, exhausted. I feel so bad for his wife and his daughter because Brad didn't want to go on the road for WWE. He didn't really want to go anywhere. We had to travel extensively because he took Julie to school every day, lived for her. He really had a great night trick-or-treating last night. I talked to Lori today about 4 times, and we're both trying to figure this out. And you don't know what to say. You don't know how to feel except, the sadness and there's like a hole in the heart.
Bobby, you probably knew Brad the longest because you've known him since he was a little boy.
About 30 years, though.
I told Tom was talking about how the guys are all, and it's true, in the dressing room they're always fun-loving, laughing, cutting up. This is probably 1975, maybe. We get to the town one night, and Bob comes in, he drops his bag, and he sits down, and he's not saying anything, and I could really tell there was something wrong. And I finally asked him, I said, "Hey, Bob," I said, "what's the matter, man?" I said, "you act like you're down tonight," and he looked at me, and he goes, "I'm going to get sued." And I said, "you're going to get sued?" I said, "by who?" He said, "my neighbor." And I said, what are you talking about? And he said, two of the boys got the neighbor kid down. And he said, Brad climbed up on the coffee table and threw a big flying elbow off the coffee table.
Well,
of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was not a working elbow.
Right, and, right.
So Bob said the neighbor was hot.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what the boys were. And hell, ain't boys are like that, but boys were, Bob, they had to do it, and they wrestled, and I remember Scott telling me, the story, they'd take to McDonald's to catch up and use for blood, and, they'd wrestle around, and, you had a rough group of boys. Brad was calm and easy going, but,
yeah,
any of those boys could fight, and I wouldn't want to test a bullet. He was 73 years old. He's not, if he knows I ever said his age, but I wouldn't test a bullet. Stevie, Scotty, Brian, or Brad.
None of them.
None of them. You're right. And and that's the way it was at household. And Brad told me again, just recently over the last couple months, that the one who ran that household was Gail, and that was the mom. She really. I was on the road. Those boys gave her grief, and he knows it. But she kept the family together, and even when Bob went through his hard times, she was always there for him. So and I saw her along with Bob, like I said last week, and it was good to see him. And just golly, man, what do you? Thought about calling Bob today, but what do you say, man? I'm talking to Lori. I know she's got a lot of calls, and I don't think Gail's taking it too well, obviously, and I don't think Bob's taking things too well. I don't think anybody's taking this too well. I don't think this is something to take well. It's really hard, so I'm trying hard not to lose my composure either, but it's been kind of hard today. Yeah, this guy was Brad touched a lot of people. He really did, and there's nobody to replace him. I was telling my wife at dinner that there's a handful of people. I could count maybe 3, and maybe I got 2, and she's one of them. I don't know, man. It's hard to explain why. Because I don't know, man. It's sick. Because Brad and I would always say, tell him, man, please take care of yourself. Please don't die on me. But yeah, that sure would ruin my day. I mean, it was like you know, trying to be humorous about something, but, you know, man, it's not humorous. And when he got in a bad wreck one time with his daughter in the car, and we had a talk, and I told him maybe it's time you need to stop and think about things. And you know, he went to get himself straightened out. So I don't know what to say. And I don't want to keep saying, you know, because I think you guys do know.
Yeah.
I think you guys all know. I think a lot of people out there know that it's just not a good thing. And it's just a real bad day for a lot of people who knew Brad, a lot of people who knew the Armstrongs, how close a family they are. And I feel so bad for Lori and Julie, because Lori has to, was waiting for Julie to get out of school, break the news to her, and this is just devastating. I can't imagine that.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, and I had nothing, man. I'm rambling. You have to stop me. I'm only doing this.
I know Lori works for one of the cables, either CNN or HBO or somebody, a cable, one of the cable companies there in Atlanta. What has Brad been doing since? I know he wrestled periodically. You know, he was at the Ted Allen thing a couple of years ago.
Brad's been in Kennesaw, Georgia, and he was working at a vitamin store.
Okay.
In Kennesaw. And I stopped by to see him at the store, actually. At the first of the month when I came up to Knoxville to get a place, and I stopped by to see him, and he had been working at the vitamin store. And he honest to goodness, didn't want to go out and wrestle and disappoint anybody. He didn't want to disappoint himself. He didn't just want to disappoint people paying money, and then, you know, you take off your shirt and then you look like... But he looked phenomenal. He looked fantastic. He could still work. He could still go. But I understand that feeling, because I'm kind of at this stage, too. You just don't want to go out, and you don't want to hurt the guy you're working with. You don't want the guy you're working with to hurt you. You don't want to disappoint him. You don't want to disappoint the people. You don't want to disappoint, you know, people look at you and go, golly, that sucked. God, look at that old man. I mean, I remember the first time, last year, I guess it was, somebody called me an old man. It's an old man. I don't know about you guys, but when I heard that, I never thought I'd feel this way, because I don't. I know I'm 53, but, you know, to hear somebody say, hey, old man, and the hair on the back of my neck stood up, and I wanted to say, and I went an hour Broadway with this kid just to show it. Who's the old man now? I mean, I did it in class. That's what I'm saying. I mean, that's kind of crap that stupid pride gets in the way, and Brad's the same way. It was one of those things you just said, I felt like a shell of myself. I don't want to go out there and not be able to do it, and people see that, and then they go, oh, man, you know, it's just not what it used to be. And that's what you said, like I said, that's what we both said when we came back, so we felt like shells of ourselves out there, not being able to go. And, you know, he used to have, golly, man, what a dropkick he had, what an arm drag. But, you know, we kept it simple, we told the story, and that's a lost art, too. And that's one reason why I don't want to get in the ring with just anybody. He was the main reason I even took that fucking too. So, it's a blow. It's something that, I don't think anybody's ready for it. You're never ready for it, but this was a tough one. So.
Bobby and I are trying to think. Jared just had his knees replaced, so in about six, 8 months, he's going to be ready for a comeback. So we're looking for a suitable opponent for him. So I think you'll fit.
Well, trust me, it won't hurt you.
You got that right, brother.
Yeah, it won't hurt
you. You may not be as quick as we were, but we're not going to hurt.
Well, I tell you, I know how to step with it. That's what this, talking about that, I mean, Brad had a bad knee. He had a bad shoulder. And, you know, we started the match, and the other thing is, you know, real quick story, and again, just cut me off, guys, because I'm kind of a...
Yeah, he's talking about, you're talking about not hurting anybody.
Yeah.
I went the last
time
I referee.
No, I just, I was just saying, Warner was supposed to be there, but he couldn't be there, and we stayed away from, Brad's shoulder, and he, we worked around it, but we told the story.
Because you knew how, man.
Exactly.
And nobody was the wiser.
Well, we were, but
what we were saying before you got on the air with us, we were all our own toughest critics anyway.
Man, it's just it's going up and down. It's one of those things that I talk to Brad, if not every day, and I mean this like every other day, and most things stuff. Who do you talk to now?
You know, we've talked about this on the show before. We met a lot of people up and down the roads and all our years in this business. We met a lot of people. And we throw the word friend around real loosely. We have a lot of acquaintances, but truth be known, we have very few friends. You and Brad had that. That's the way me and Charlie Smith are. I talk to Charlie every day. My wife says I have a new steady because I'm getting to where I talk to Bo every day or two.
Exactly. And that's the same thing. That's what my wife said, too. My wife said, if you listen to you guys talk, it'd be like two giddy girlfriends.
What my wife says. We understand each other. That's the beauty of this.
Go ahead.
I'm just saying, I live far enough away from Bo that my wife doesn't have to worry about me going out and playing with him, so I won't get in trouble.
Right.
You're getting close again, Bubba. You got to be careful.
No, he's cleaned up his act too, and the two, and I said one is my wife, and the other one has to be both. So I mean, I'm just counting them down on one hand, and it's like, you're right. You throw that word around loosely, but that's what it was, and that's.
It's over with. I'm going to have all you guys working for the stuff that LeBron West and I anyways.
Well, hell, yeah, it's a good idea, man. Maybe it wasn't such a good idea. I came off. Not doing good. But, it's a bad day.
Oh,
but, you know what? Well, it was here. It was good. We just got to gotta deal with it, man, but it's hard to. And it's like I can't compare it, but it's almost like I remember when Chris Candido kind of went, and I think about him every day, but it was a different relationship, I knew Chris in a different way, and Brad and Noel for 30 years, and I said every day for a while, it's just now what? So I have to figure out now what. And you throw it, or you can't throw. You throw it, like we said. You throw that friend around and all that stuff. But now Brad was more than a friend. He was more than a brother. He was more than just one of those people. Somebody that at least you can confide in, trust in. He understood. I understood. And that was part of the thing. That unless you've lived, or done some of this that we've done, nobody can understand it or relate to it because you say the acquaintance word more than you do friend. And when it comes right down to it, you find out who your friends are.
Yep.
Yeah, Lori said something to me today about, you know, when judging people, when something went down, you know, I didn't judge him, he didn't judge me, but there were other people just dropped him, and all of a sudden, the ones you think are your friends, you find out real quick who's on your side and who's not, man, and a lot of people jump ship, and he never jumped ship on me. And,
Mike Norris.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to have to leave you guys.
Okay, but Gary, I appreciate you being on with us. You keep going and you keep getting better, and we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for all your prayers.
All right, Jerry, hang in there, brother.
Okay, good night, guys.
Good night.
Yeah, Jerry. Jerry's still on some pretty heavy medication.
Yeah, I guess. I hope he's doing good. Yeah, I wouldn't anything I said. Yeah, anyway.
Well, Tom, I know it's been a hard day for you, bud, and I really appreciate you giving us your time and everything. And
yeah, I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry.
No problem. It's totally understandable. I am so grateful that you're giving us your time and everything. Get off here and go hug your wife, man.
I appreciate it, man.
All right, man. Take care of yourself, okay?
Yep. You got our numbers. Thanks. If you need anybody to talk to, you know where we are. So keep in touch with us. You take care of yourself, Tom.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
All right. Good night, Tom.
Wow.
Tough day.
I can't. Tough. Well, my adopted daddy's been hanging on the line here. I'm going to get him on the line with us real quick. Direct from Pensacola, Florida, Mr. Bowman, how are you doing this evening, sir?
I am doing great. It was good listening to Tom Pritchett. It shows what friendship is all about.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
And I have it with a few friends in which people know. But it was interesting. Can I tell you all a story today?
Absolutely.
Yes, sir.
I went to my VA center today, and they were checking me for different things. But anyway, after I got through, I went on to this restaurant that I have friends with, and I said, maybe I can find a friend down there that'll buy me lunch. So anyway, I went in, and I sat down there at the bar, and all of a sudden, here runs up was Ann's friend, boss, and she came running over to me and says, I just read in the paper where you're dead. She says, we about went crazy. Well, we called around trying to find out what you died of. And I said, well, I died of something. I'm back alive. I'm sitting here. And anyway, in the paper, in the Pensacola paper, and I'm going to cut it out, William Bowman passed away last night. And anyway, there's another William Bowman in Pensacola. And he was 80 years old, so everybody thought it was me. And I had two other people come up and said, well, we thought you were dead. I'm not. And so, as one of my friends was leaving, I said, my services will be Saturday at 8:30.
I think you ought to cut that out during the thing at the reunion in March. You ought to throw that name in there. See if anybody catches it.
Really? But it really caught me off guard. I was sure. To change back, I'll talk about Brad a second. I was sure sad to hear about this. because he was, I thought he was one of the greatest workers in the business and one of the nicest people. I had the privilege of working with him twice, and it was, you know, a night off and a pleasure working with a professional like he was. And he's definitely going to be missed.
He is that.
Yeah.
He is that. It's just, I don't know, Bill. I think about this every time we lose somebody. And after I think about them and everything, I always think about you and Marge. You've got the toughest job of any of us, and I wouldn't want to do that. For those that don't know, at the Gulf Coast Reunion every year, we do a 10-bell salute to all the people from the business that we've lost since the last reunion, and Bill has the unenviable task of standing there at the microphone and reading those names off. And sometimes that list is awful long.
Yeah, it makes it very, very hard when you have personal friends that are in the business that you lose, and it just about tears your heart out of you. But that's all part of life, and we go on and do it the next time. I just wonder who's going to do it when I'm gone. So that's the big question.
I guess it's just part of our business, but I was talking to somebody the other day. The 10-bell salute, I stand there and squall even when I don't know the people that's died when I hear that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It tears my heart out. Oh.
Yep. It just takes it right out of you. But I think I need to do that every year when I can. And I've been doing it for 26 years.
Yeah, we need to remember.
Yep.
We need to remember. And, this makes it all the more important, I think, today. It just kind of brings it to light just how important our reunions are. I mean, these guys make every excuse in the world not to come. Some of them, well, if I go, I'll have to admit I'm getting old, or I got other things to do, or that one weekend a year, whether it's here or Las Vegas, or getting together at my church up here when we have a dinner up here, or Scott Teal's reunion up in Nashville. I mean, those things are so important. They are so important because we just never know.
I mean, how many of us yesterday would have thought Brad Armstrong would be gone today?
If you had named 100 names that you thought might die today, his name wouldn't have been on it.
No.
No, sir.
No.
He would have not been on that for sure.
Oh.
Or Mike Graham 2 weeks ago. I mean, it's just, you know, it's just crazy. Crazy, crazy.
Well, we know one thing. There'll be another shoe dropped. There'll be three.
Yep.
Yeah.
Always.
Outside of the wrestling business, and I did want to bring this up, because we're trying to, you know, keep it about the wrestling business, but there was another death today as well. And if you were living in Atlanta or were an Atlanta Braves fan in the early 80s, the name Pascual Perez means something to you.
Yeah.
He was one of the in the starting rotation, was well known, especially in 1982, which was his first year with the Braves. He was best known for getting lost on 285 and circling around it for 4 hours and never figuring out how to
kept looking for the stadium.
He missed his start and was well known for all his antics on the. He was an entertaining guy to watch. He was so fun to watch on the mound because he wore more jewelry than Mr. T. And the umpires were constantly making him either tuck it in his shirt or take it off or something, and he was. He was long and lanky and just had the weirdest approach to the mound, but he was something. He was something. But he was, unfortunately, he was living back in the Dominican Republic, which is where he was from. Somebody broke into his house to rob his house and kill him in the process. So,
good.
Crazy world, folks.
No, But he was an entertainer.
Oh, yes, he was.
I loved to watch him. I'd watch him on the TV. Ann and my son, Brian, they would go to the ballpark, and they would enjoy him. Well, what else is going on with you, Bobby?
Just working and keeping up with church members as best I can. Miss Debbie's going to have a cataract removed in a couple of weeks, so we're hoping that's going to significantly help her eyesight.
And, that's great.
Other than that, we're just marching right along.
Yeah.
You know, we march to a different drum, but we're moving anyway.
Yeah. My son and his wife, they all planned to come last Sunday, but Brian has been having a lot of problems and with his leg and his upper, I can't even talk about it. But anyway, they plan to go this Sunday, Bobby, so if you see them, don't be surprised.
Oh, yeah, they show up and surprise me every once in a while.
Yeah.
We're always glad to see them.
And while we're on the air and I have witnesses, Mr. Bowman is committed to being at the Ted Allen Memorial.
Yes.
September 16th.
There you go.
And my partner in crime will be Roberto Soto.
If we can talk him into it.
There you go.
He's probably dipping and dodging some folks. We may have to put a mask on him and bring him in.
Is there anybody in particular that you want to work with that night, or just whoever they match you up with?
I can go in and have a facial match. You know? I could grimace and yell and and go.
We were up there last year and we did that battle royal where they had four generations of Georgia referees doing a battle royal. They had Charlie and Ronnie and myself and Scrappy. And Nick Music asked me, he said, which one of y'all are going to take the bump? And I said, well, Bubba, if you see me on the mat, you'll know I trip. You need to send somebody to help me.
Yeah. You know, y'all were talking about earlier, you know, about facial expressions and things. Joe and I were great at that in doing a match, you know, by handling a lot of that. And, you know, not fighting back with the audience, but the different expressions and things to get a match over and all. And it was 50% of the match.
Oh, yeah.
And that was fun to me. I had a great person tell me not long ago that my facial expressions were one of the greatest in the business, and that was Bob Armstrong. Bob said I had the facial expressions for a little bit of everything, and I said, I guess so, you know. I was hurting. My pocketbook was hurting all the time, and I was worried about Joe, you know. By the way, is Joe on the air?
He was. He dropped off. He may be listening on his computer. He's not on the phone. He may call in here in a minute. But I've got somebody that's just called in that I want to get on with us. I know you'll be thrilled to talk to, and I know he'll want to talk to you. So hang on just a second. Mr. East Tennessee, Bo James.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
Handsome Bo James.
Well, I've already sent Terry Rocker Lawler a email that I want to work with Mr. Bill Bowman on the Ted Allen Memorial.
that would be my pleasure, because I know that would be a night off, and that would be an interesting match.
I tell people they can work with me if they were in a body cast.
Well, Bobby and I are going to flip a coin to see which one of us gets to work with Misty in a mixed tag match.
Well, I can tell you right now, she's a crowbar. You don't want to work with her.
Okay.
Is your match over already, sir?
Yeah. Well, they end up canceling the town. Nobody showed, done locked the door. I was getting in the car to leave, and they called and told me not to come.
Okay.
So I have been sitting here listening, and just like all of us that know him, just having an absolutely rough day.
Yeah.
It's just we're trying to find humor in anything we can today.
Definitely so.
I told Mike, we were talking about this before we went on the air. You guys, y'all may know this, but Brad told me this story himself. He said that when him and the boys were little, he, like all brothers, of course, they'd get mad at each other and they'd want to fight. And he'd say if Bob happened to be home and he'd catch them fighting, he would get them in a room. He'd make Gail go in another part of the house, and he would get in the room and he'd move the furniture out of the way. And he'd say, okay, y'all fight. And he said they just had some of the darndest knockdown dragouts you've ever seen right there in the house. He said, but when they got through, he said the worst part was Bob would make them kiss each other and tell each other they loved each other. And he said, man, he said, we didn't mind fighting. He said, but when it come to kissing and saying we love you, he said, that was tough.
Yeah. And that just carried over into our profession. I mean, we have so much love for so many people, but it's so hard for us to tell them.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And my heart has been broke today on one of just losing Brad and two of listening to Tom. I mean, it's just, I know the pain that he's got right now.
Yeah.
And I've been thinking of since Bobby, or since I heard on the, read it on the internet, and Bobby talked to you and called me back and confirmed it. Knowing Bob, like we all do. I mean, Bob, the first time he met, and Bill can attest to this, the first time he came to the reunion 2 or 3 years ago, whenever it was, everybody had been after him for years to come, and he didn't want to come for whatever reason. And he finally came, and he stood in the corner and squalled like a baby.
He stood back there next to me and cried for an hour and a half.
And I just, I can just not imagine what he and Gail are going through right now. Not
amazing. Well, this may sound cruel, but I don't want to know what they feel like.
No. Nope.
I just
Bobby already knows, and Bill knows too. They both know how close I am to my daughter. If anything happened to my daughter, Bobby has permission to just go ahead and dig a hole and put me in it because I won't be worth a darn.
Yeah.
It's just. That's my
heart.
I just cannot
imagine. Well, on a positive note, let's do something positive here.
All right.
Our friend here, Mr. James, has his new book coming out, and he's aiming for Black Friday, the Friday after Thanksgiving, to let it hit the streets. And he let me peek behind the curtain a little, and I read a chapter the other day, and I promised to, you know, not share much, but... I'm going to tell you something. If the rest of this book is as good as the chapter I read, this is a must-have, my friends. And if you read the first one, you know how good the first one was. This would be a great Christmas gift for yourself or anybody. And you make sure you got my address right there, Bo, you know, for the tag. I did. Seriously, I read a chapter the other day that he sent me, and I'm telling you, it's going to be dynamite. And it's funny, and especially if you were in the business, you can put yourself in any one of these stories. Maybe it wasn't exactly the same, but you know, the truth be known, maybe we didn't go to jail, but there's not many of us that shouldn't have been if we'd have got caught. So you know,
I'm still waiting on people to come to the door.
Well, now you know how Roberto Soto feels, don't you?
Well, it wasn't him, it was his brother.
Yeah.
Well, it's the same way as I said about his first book. Here we are on the radio here. Bill's from one generation, Bobby's of another, I'm of another, and they both came along after all of us. But every one of us have read his book, and every one of us have found at least a half a dozen things in that book that we
related to CCI. I know exactly what that's like.
Oh, yeah.
We've all lived the same crazy, wonderful life.
Hey, Bo.
Yes.
I tell you what, when I read your book, I thought it was one of the great love stories, and I just didn't realize. And you pulled it out for Meet Me at the end when she showed up, your wife, I'm telling you.
Oh, yeah. I tell everybody, you know, you can't make it up. It's a fair, we have lived a true fairy tale, you know. So and the help of the good Lord and her, that's the only reason I'm here now. Because I was truly was at the end of my life before she showed up.
Let me ask you a question.
Uh-huh.
Do you have any wrestling King of Sport stickers that stick on the back of your car?
Yes, I do.
When you come to Mobile, could you bring a couple for me, please?
I sure will. I sure will. In fact, I just found an old one that I just used the Photoshop to clean up because I was going to have some printed because you don't see them anymore.
No, that's the great part, yes.
Yeah.
But I would appreciate it if you did.
I sure will.
Okay.
I sure will.
I'm looking forward to reading your book, I'm telling you.
Well, this one here, where the first one was more about my life as an autobiography, this one is just short stories of funny, sad, ridiculous. It's called It Takes All Kinds, the people, places, and things and events that make up pro wrestling. You know, and we've all been there, you know. And the thing that I look at, I really believe that the boys that I broke in with and the few of us that's still here, we're the end of the line. There's because the guys that have followed us have not followed in the same business or the same footsteps that we did.
They're in a different group, totally.
Yeah.
Yes.
The business as we knew it and the business as we still know it, when this generation is gone, it's gone. The only thing going to be left are the books.
Yeah.
And the tapes that somebody may have. But, you know, the new generation, they look at the tapes that we enjoy and they go, you know, what's that?
That, it's just like I told you the other night, Bobby. I had a fan ask me at the picture table the other night. He said, do you ever get tired of wrestling Scott Sterling? And I said, no. He broke in the same time I did, the same way I did, and I know I'm not going to get hurt, and I'm not going to hurt him. And I could go to the ring and have a match with him every night. And it's just, that's not in the next generation.
No.
And I got a nephew that turned 18 years old today. His boots and wrestling gear will be here tomorrow. And he's ready to start.
Great.
You know, that'll be the third generation of my family. Somebody in my family's been in the business since 1964.
Well, before you start him, send him down to Pensacola, Florida, and let Bill Bowman stretch him a little bit and see if he still wants it.
I've already knocked him out cold twice. And I've tied him up, just had him scream for his mother a few times because... I want him to understand it's not what he thinks it is.
Well, did you ask him, do you want to be a wrestler, kid?
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, he was born with a sickness just like the rest of us to follow in this business. And that's like I told my wife. I said, if I don't watch him, take care of him, make sure he does it, he's going to go somewhere else to try to get in, and he's not going to learn the right ways. But, and that's where we're at. And, I mean, he's talking about the reunions. I walk in those buildings, and even though I'm part of this family and I'm part of this business for a quarter century, I'm still a little kid at times when I see some of these men that I just idolized as a child.
Me too.
And Bullet Bob Armstrong is one of them. I mean, other than Whitey Caldwell, he was the hottest babyface East Tennessee ever had. And I see Bullet, and I always tell him, I said, you know, you're my friend, and I love you, but man, when last year when he come dancing in there in front of everybody like he was going to the ring, the hairs on my arm stood up. I was 10 years old again watching him and Ron Fuller. And it's, you know, they may take our business away from us, and they take everything else we got, but they can't take our memories.
That's right.
Or our friendship.
Our friendships, or the fact that we were there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I got in on the tail end of it, but I was there.
Bo's house, I've never been there, but just hearing him talk, it's decorated in early wrestling. In my house, I have very few wrestling things on the wall. You know, around. I mean, I've got some stuff that's put up, but I've got very few things that are hanging on the wall or whatever. But you're talking about the friendships and the things, and I'm fixing to make Mr. Bowman, don't you hang up on us. One thing I have in my house, and you're talking about the friends and the people that we appreciate. On right by my dining room table, there's a picture of me and Bill Bowman that I think Ann made in Mobile many years ago, and it's been there ever since I brought it home that day. You know, those kind of things. I mean, you know, I don't have pictures of Michael because Michael stays here more than he stays at home, so I see him. But you know, it's just.
Well, I have, and
my wife says I have a new girlfriend in Bo because me and him get on the phone and talk 2 hours at a time. But it's, you know, it's just. I mean,
it's
you can't buy this stuff, man. This is just.
My dad called me today. He knows all the Armstrongs before they've been here. He heard about Brad and he called. And my dad was a highly decorated war hero in Vietnam. 3 tours of duty. He was combat wounded 9 different times. He was the member of the Walking Dead, the Delta Force 19 of the Marine Corps. And he told me he goes to these PSTD meetings for the distress that these soldiers have when they come home. And he told me, he said, you know, you guys need one for the wrestling business. Because nobody understands you except each other.
That's the truth.
And that's my daily conversations with Dr. Tom and with you, Bobby, and Bill Dundee. And they're therapy. Because all we got is each other.
I'll tell you something. This is the same vein of thought here. I cried all day today, off and on. I was sitting in my office right by myself working, trying to work. And I'd gotten pretty bad about 3 o'clock this afternoon just thinking about this. And the phone rang, and I reached over and picked it up, and it was Jimmy Powell. And I told him, I said, the good Lord knows what you need when you need it. I needed to hear somebody's voice.
Mm-hmm.
I needed to hear somebody say, hey, you know, I care. And, you know, that's true. We don't have that. It's so hard for us to voice how we really feel about each other because we're macho men, but, you know. The older I get, the more I don't mind telling people I love them, and it's important to me.
Nobody understands what we've been through. You know, we're not normal everyday people that where we can ride 500 and 800 miles in a day and just beat the ever living stew out of one another, and then ride back and laugh about it. And shoot guns at each other going up the road and throw bottles at each other and everything else that we've done. But unless you've lived it, you can't understand it.
There's no way.
Yeah, and that's...
I'm sorry, but I don't mean to interrupt you. I got one more caller I want to get on the line here. Mr. Bowman's brother, Joe Scott. Mr. Turner, you there with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Well, you sound like you're in your car. Are you traveling somewhere?
I was a while ago, but I'm going to try to get the speakerphone off. I cut you off, I'll call back. All right.
I'm really scared now. They're both on the phone.
Okay.
I got to tell Mr. Bowman, I'm still in Tennessee, and I'm still waiting on my satin shorts. So.
Yeah, really? They're not satin, they're silk.
Yes,
silk.
Sir.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
I told you what we did to Ed Moretti, didn't I?
Yeah, yeah.
He come
I
down
there.
He didn't work for Nick but 2 weeks, and he left, and he said he never got him. So we, at breakfast at Dick Russell's one morning, we went to Kmart. Gene Bennett, he bought the biggest pair of silk drawers they had up there. I mean, they had little frills on them, and we just presented them to him right there in the middle of the restaurant.
And don't bother me. He used to pull jokes in Walmart. My wife would scatter out and go different ways because he wore bikini shorts. And we'd be in there, and he'd one of the girls would be straightening the table up, and he'd walk over and he said, "Can I help you?" He said, "Yeah." And he had no butt to hold his pants up with. He had to hold him up with his belly, so he sucked his belly, and his pants would fall down to the floor. And she'd look over and say, "Oh, excuse me," and pull him up.
They'd put you in jail if you did that now. You can't. It's not. You're not allowed to have fun anymore. All.
Yeah. Who we got on the line here?
Bill's here. Bo James is here. Bobby and I are here. We had Tom Pritchard on earlier. Coming up rather strong. And good thing now you're here. So, James all here. Jerry Oates was with us earlier, but his
he had to hit the morphine button again.
I heard that. He had more guts than I did, getting both knees done at one time.
Whoa. Well, he said. He said tonight, he said, if he'd have got one done, he don't know if he'd have went back for the second one. He said, this is the toughest thing he's ever been through.
Yeah, I heard that.
Thanks to Bill Bowman and Joe Turner, so they're saying something.
Yeah. Yeah, it's. Yeah, I had y'all on earlier, but I got in some heavy traffic. I was late coming home from Mississippi. And they're blacktopping that road, and I really had a rough time getting through there, so I shut the phone off.
They blacktopping the interstate, or did you come to back road?
No, the interstate.
Oh, okay.
You know how bad that gets.
Yeah.
I mean, they're fixing the potholes in Mississippi. I don't know when I'm going to through Mississippi now.
Only on the interstate. Don't get on off on the side roads.
No, really?
Yeah.
I see those. I give you a funny story about potholes. Ain't got nothing to do with nothing, but it's just a funny story. Back when I was pastoring the church over in College Park, where y'all came up that time too,
yeah.
The city of East Point was going to incorporate that area. They were trying to incorporate that area and eventually did. So we had to go to a city council meeting. And for 15 minutes in East Point, Georgia, they let just anybody who wants to come up and speak about anything. So this one guy gets up and he goes up and he says, "Mr. Mayor," he said, "I have determined how the city of East Point can save X number of dollars." And the mayor perked up and he said, "Well, we always interested in how we can save money." He said, "I think we need to take all the signs down all around town that says, 'Welcome to East Point.'" And the mayor says, "Well, why do we want to do that?" He said, "We want people to know they're at East Point." He said, "We got so many potholes here." He said, "They'll know they're at East Point as soon as they hit one."
Yeah, that. Over in Mississippi, I think those road engineers over there skipped a few classes.
Yeah. One last time year, let me tell this one real quick, Jeff.
Right.
Last year, I don't remember if it was in New York or if it was in Washington, D.C., but Bonnie West called me and said, I got a flat tire. I said, "What happened?" He said, "I hit a pothole." He said, "And the funny thing was, I hit the same pothole and got a flat tire last year." I said, "Well, you should have known better. You should have known where you were going and gotten out of the way."
Well, one time on Bayview Avenue, that's the road where I work at over there. So, and there was a patch of strip along there, probably 15, 20 foot long. They just completely resurfaced that part because it's so rough in there. And they resurfaced it all the way up to a pothole that was 3 foot wide, and they quit. Yeah, and if you fell in that pothole there, you'd have to carry a survival kit with you.
They didn't have enough asphalt to keep continuing to fill that pothole, so they just quit.
Yeah. When they patch a hole, they patch it, don't block it off or pack it down, anything, and next thing you know, the washout from the tires running through it is higher than what the hole was deep.
I don't know.
Hey, Bo?
Yeah?
You know, I was just thinking about you, about a trip Joe and I made from Nashville to Johnson City. We got to about 40 miles outside of Johnson City. This is back when the old roads, you come up from Knoxville. And
yeah, the old 11E.
Terrible, terrible. But we came up and we stopped at a service station, and tell you how times were in the wrestling business, and I didn't have any money to buy any gas. So I took and opened the trunk on that little Mustang, and I had a good spare, and I got $5 worth of gas on that spare. And then went on to Johnson City. We did our little thing there in Johnson City, and we got the money from the office. We were supposed to bring it back. So guess what? We got our $5, and I guarantee you about $20 more.
What story? Gas in that car. Bobby's told this story on here before, but I want him to tell it again. How he and Randy Corrin got some gas in South Georgia.
Oh. This was, if I'm not mistaken, this was either the first or second trip Randy ever made with me. We were going to Waycross, and we had a cage on the back of the truck. It was one of them cages like you put a manager, you hoist him up over the ring, like a big bird cage.
Yep.
And the cage would come apart, the sides would fold down flat, and you'd lay the top on it. But even with it apart, you didn't have any problem telling it was a cage. So I pulled in a gas station down there, and I stopped that quite a bit, and this old boy come out. And this is before we didn't have any signs on the truck or anything, just old white pickup. And this old boy come out, and he's you know, just a local old South Georgia boy, and he's pumping the gas, and he's looking at that cage. And Randy's on the other side of the truck, and he ain't saying a whole lot. And the boy looked at me, and he goes, hey, he said, what you going to do with that cage? And I said, well, my name is Dr. Simmons, and that's Dr. Cochran over there. And I said, we from Emory University in Atlanta. And I said, we're on the way to the Okefenokee Swamp. I said, they have captured a Troglosaurus. And the guy said, what? And I said, a Troglosaurus. I said, you ever watch any of them old dinosaur movies about them flying birds and stuff? He goes, yeah. I said, well, they found one. And I said, we're on the way down there to get it. And I said, we're going to take it back to Emory where them scientists up there can study it. He kept pumping that gas, and he kept looking at that cage. And when he got through, he finally looked at me, and he goes, I tell you what, Bubba. He said, I'll give you this tank of gas. He said, if you promise to bring that bird by here tomorrow, let me see it. I said, okay, Bubba, we'll see you tomorrow. And off we went.
Oh, boy.
We lost Bo. Hopefully he'll call back in, but he just lost him here for a minute.
Do what?
I said, we just lost Bo, but hopefully he'll call back in here in a minute.
Oh, okay.
He dropped, so.
Yeah, it's bad when me and Bill stopped at boot store by the Georgia line there. Yeah. No girl, what do y'all do? I said, we break wild elephants. Y'all what? Yeah, that's, you know, the elephants have to be tamed. We have to ride them.
We sure told her that.
Well, she's going to college too, and she bought in on that one. So, like we said before, we've got to entertain each other.
Well, I'm thoroughly convinced that we could have sold Eskimo snowshoes in our day if we'd have wanted to.
Yeah, me too.
Because the more serious you are in telling the story, the more people buy it. And you can tell them anything, and they'll go for it.
Yeah, you know, we've done a pretty good job making it sound serious.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just unbelievable. We stopped at Howard Johnson, Spartanburg, South Carolina one time. And Johnny Hydman, you was with me, wasn't you, Bill?
Yep.
Yeah, anyway, we went in there, and we're going to get us a little snack. And so we parked around toward the back. And Johnny Hydman was a whole lot older than we were. And, I mean, he was old when we met him, you know. But anyway,
he's sitting there, and I walked, and he's taking his time, and that waitress was talking to us some. So anyway, I walked outside, and just because I was getting bored, and walked outside and come back in. I says, Adaman? I said, Daddy? I called him Daddy. I said, Daddy, I told you not to marry that little young girl. I said, she's out in the car, and I think her water's broke. And I said, he says, well, I'm not leaving right now. And I told him, I said, well, her water's broke. She had that baby out in the car. And that waitress is about to go crazy. Don't y'all need to go help her? And we had her jumping up and down, man. But we had to convince he's married some young girl and then got her pregnant. Anyway.
That was continuously with Joe and I doing stuff like that. That's what kept us alive on the road for so many years. But we were able, if he was talking to somebody, I could come right in and join right in because I knew it was a work, something he was doing, and vice versa with me.
Yeah.
Same thing. It was continual.
Yeah. Yeah, it's we used to pull it on some of the fans. Even we'd pull that deal about Bill would ask him, say, "Hey, when I'm picking at everybody, to ask Joe about his sister's dancing lessons." And boy, when they'd ask me that, I didn't care where I was at. I'd get up and cuss everybody and walk off and disappear. You know, Bill would tell them, say, "Well, I probably shouldn't have got you to do that. You know, his sister's in a wheelchair." Yeah. And he had his... some of them girls would start crying, and the little midget guys at work, some of them was crying. One of them kept calling my house. Telling my wife I was married to him. You know, tell Joe I didn't mean it. Yeah. Then Joe Fur that away too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. He called a whole lot.
Well, that's a name I hadn't heard in a long time. Joe Fur. I wonder what that became of him.
That is Joe Fur.
He lived outside of the Carolinas.
He lived in Indiana.
Did he?
Yep. What was his partner's name, Joe?
That's what I'm trying to think of. He bought all them little antique cars all the time. Grabmeyer was his name, wasn't it?
Yeah, Jim Grabmeyer.
Yeah.
Jim Grabmeyer, yeah, okay.
They bought antiques also.
He used to go up to them hills, and he'd leave early in the morning. And he'd go up there, and he'd come back, and he may have an old Cadillac convertible,
hey,
but they only made so many of them.
Bobby, I got to jump off and catch a line. I'll call you right back.
All right. Go ahead, Jeff.
But he'd buy them old antique. He bought a 50, a 52, or something like that, Cadillac convertible for some woman that had it in her garage since her husband died years before that. And he'd go in there, and, like he went to the bank, and ask them if they knew anybody had any stuff sitting around that'd sell. Sort of like these pickers on TV. And he'd buy stuff like that, and he bought that, and I think, for $800 and sold it for, like, $12,000. He done good doing all that. You know, people... Yeah, there's a lot of them guys, man, just... You know, you forget about them because you don't hear anything about them anymore.
Yep. We were talking earlier at the top of the show about the Florida territory. We were talking about Mike Graham. We were talking about the Florida territory, all the different people, big-name people that worked in that territory, you know, opening cards and, you know, all that in the early 70s and everything. And the Carolinas was a lot like that, too. I mean, you had guys like Grabmeyer and, you know, Johnny Heidemann and people like that doing jobs. And they were big names at one point. Abe Jacobson and people like that. So it's amazing. But that's what you build a territory on back in
back then, that's the way they did it. They built territory. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, just about everybody in the business that stayed in any time had somewhere where they'd done real well. So, you know, they had a territory that they built a territory around them, you know.
Yeah.
So, anyway, it's some territories are big. You don't know who's they putting over. You see them over in this one place doing a job. Next place, they're going over the main event. So
that's true.
Yeah. You know, just like the Carolinas and Tennessee, you know, that's huge territories. Since you keep up so much, Michael, what about Nikita Mukovic? Whatever happened to him?
I have no clue. No idea, but I was telling somebody the other day, I would love to come across some of his old belts. He made the best belts.
Funny. That's what his trade was when he came in from Russia. And he went to Canada. And and he was, Pedro Cador called him FBI. Yeah. He was instrumental in a big breakup of the communist ring up that way. But anyway, he Pedro Cador said he FBI. Anyway, he's a character, though.
And he, I guess the last big run he had was up in New York with Godoy and Juan Sebastian, were up there working as the Russians. He was their manager, and he wrestled every once in a while, but then he came to Mobile in 71 and stayed about 4 or 5 months, and then I don't know what happened to him after that.
I hadn't heard anybody say anything about him in many years.
His name was Alex Malko, but like I said, I don't know whatever became of him. I think the first one that ever started using his belts, the Sheik did in Detroit, and then pretty much late 60s, early 70s, everybody was using his belts, and then everybody got started liking what Reggie Parks was doing. Everybody switched to that style of belt, and Malkovic just kind of faded away. I know Ken Allen had, or was it Bobby? Was it Scrappy that had one of the old Macon's?
Scrappy's got the Macon belt.
That was a Malkovic belt.
I apologize for jumping off, guys. I had a call come in from Hawaii, and I knew who it was, so I had to jump off. John Walker said, "Tell everybody hello."
Well, good.
And he's doing fine. He had heard about Brad. He was trying to get some details.
Yeah.
Get him on the show one week.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, Scrappy's got Scrappy's got the Macon City belt, and he's also got one of the Macon tag belts, and they were both made by Malkovich.
Well, see, he worked for a car dealer. I'm in a car factory up in manufacturer somewhere. Up in Canada or somewhere, but that's what he done. He molded metal for him. And he had a lot of experience in that.
He definitely made some nice belts. Bo, is that something, do you have anything like that in your collection, any old belts or anything?
The belts that we still use now, we use as the Southern States belts. They say Eastern States Champion on them. And I have no idea how old they are, but I found pictures of the Blue Infernos and several other people wearing them back in the 60s. And Gypsy Joe looked at them, and he said they used them as the world belts up on this end for Mickey Barnes. And
okay.
Then Joe Cazana, which is John Cazana's grandson, he said that those belts were used for everything through the years in Knoxville, from the world titles to the Tennessee titles to the Southeastern belts.
I think I've got pictures of the Von Brauners wearing them, if I'm not mistaken.
The one belt has another plate underneath it. There's two plates on it, on the center of it. And I'm just too afraid to try to take it apart to see what the one underneath, because I'm afraid I'll never get it back together.
but I don't know if it was a singles belt, and they came along, made because they kind of, I mean, they're very close, but they don't match exactly. So that's why I wonder if, you know, the one was a singles belt, and then they made the other belt later on. But
take a picture of it and send me a picture of it. I'll see if I can't figure out where they are.
I will. I sent one to Mark James the other night to him look through his Memphis stuff to see if they were ever used down on that end. And Ron Wright and Don Wright both told me that those belts were being used when they were kids going to the matches. So I don't know how long they've been around.
That might have been the belt Jacob got when he pinned that angel.
Everybody that looks at them belts and don't know the history of them, they go, why are you using them things? You know. And I tell them, I said, man, that's the oldest thing in this business. As long as I hold on to them. You know, I've got a guy cleaning them right now, trying to clean them up a little bit. And then I'm going to have to retire them soon because the people just... I'm afraid I'm going to lose them somewhere, or somebody's going to throw them around or hit somebody with them, and then there'll be nothing left of them. So anything that I can preserve, I keep. Bill Dundee told me I need armed guards on my front and back door for this museum I got in here.
One of the old Southern tag team belts became a Gulf Coast tag team belt that Mr. Bowman and Mr. Turner held, and they were interns. I don't know if it's the one Joe scalped his own cousin with or not. I don't see any blood traces on it.
Is it thin metal?
Yeah, so it's one of those ones, those axe-shaped ones that you guys had.
Yeah, that's one I scalped him with.
Joe, tell him
getting, huh?
Tell them about that, about fighting for our lives, and how you scalp your cousin.
Yeah, he done knocked the policeman down getting to us, and come out to us, and when I hit him with that thing, it's like hitting with a tomahawk or an axe, you know. There's a puddle of blood enough to fill up a quart milk jug and hit the floor before he did.
It really scalped him, too.
Yeah.
It scalped him so bad, they took us to jail.
Yeah.
See, that was a big day to him, but to you all, it was just another day.
Yeah.
Really?
Well, Bill, you haven't told the best part. Bill wouldn't, they wouldn't tell them their real names or take their masks off.
They couldn't find out who we were. And when we came back to court, I have a Marine Corps tattoo on my left arm. And I covered it all up with tape and had Joe do the same thing. And they couldn't find out who was the one that swung the belt.
Yeah.
But anyway, it was Joe's cousin. It really was. And he didn't realize Joe was one of the interns. I thought Joe's daddy was going to shoot us one night. Too. He got so excited at ringside.
He did.
Got heat with him.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Where was Jerry Graham during all that? Leading away.
Right in the middle of us, fighting for his life also. And Joe Powell was refereeing, and he was fighting for his life. And that was our normal routine. So.
You know how far it was from the ring to the double doors of Fort Whiting. And, Michael, I know you've seen it plenty of times. So, anyway... It's a short distance, but it sure get long whenever there's 200 or 300 people got you blocked off the hives and everything.
Come out that ring sometimes, and it look like it's 300 miles to them dressing room doors.
Yeah, so anyway, that one night, we made it to that doors, and they had them pulled too, and they opened them up for us to get through there, to get out of the crowd, and the police did. Well, here come a guy right behind us, and told him he could whip our butts. And the policeman said later on said he was so tired of hearing him say that that they just opened the door, shoved him in there with us.
Sure did.
Yeah, so anyway, Billy Hyde and him's up at the top of the stairs and all, and man, we started fighting, and we couldn't figure out why he wasn't dropping to the floor. So I backed up underneath him, she was holding him up. Billy Hyde had his head up under his chest and pushed it straight up at him. just going to town, boy.
You can't have fun like that anymore.
No. No. But,
well, guys, I got one more caller I want to get on. He's been patiently waiting for most of the show, actually, and I want to get him on as our friend Jeff Luce from Jacksonville. I know he was a big Brad Armstrong fan, grew up watching France. Let me get Jeff on real quick. Jeff, you there, bud?
Oh, yeah. How are you guys doing tonight?
Doing great. Doing great. Got Bill Bowman, Joe Turner, Bo James, Bobby, and myself.
Yeah.
I got your message just before I started to call in for the show about Brad. Yeah, we had known about that. It's a shock.
Yeah, it was with a heavy heart that I called in tonight. But, you know, because I got to watch Brad from the time that he was just a buck rookie and until he made a mark in this great sport. And, I mean, this one really hit home for me, you know, because, you guys knew him personally, but, I had an emotional investment in Brad Armstrong, and you know, I'm just glad that he got to succeed and do what he loved doing. My physical disabilities prevented me from ever becoming a professional wrestler, but, I got to live through you guys, and I just, want the world to know that Brad was just a thrill to watch in that ring, and I got to, spend a lot of time at that in front of the auditorium there in Pensacola and watch him work with some of the best, and I never felt ripped off watching the Brad Armstrong match, I will tell you that.
Not at all.
I got to watch him and Ric Flair put on a show, and then I actually got to unwittingly be part of the show. Ric Flair had pulled Brad's trunks to finally win the match, and it was a pretty long, grueling match. And then as Rick was walking back towards the dressing room, and the fans were going crazy saying, he cheated, and I told the referee, I said, he didn't pull his trunks, he didn't do that. Rick won fair and square, and Ric Flair said, you listen to that kid right there, he knows what he's talking about. And it was just a thrill, it's just so sad for a young guy who's just 10 years older than me to have lost his life. And, you can't explain it, but, he made his mark, and that's what's most important is that Brad Armstrong is remembered as a great guy.
Oh, yeah, and all of us, and Brad loved the fans, I'll tell you. I don't know if you heard what Tom was saying earlier. Brad just loved to be part of the business. He didn't care about, pushing his way to the top or whether he was going to, where he was on the card. He just loved the business and loved, the adoration that the fans gave him. I mean, he just left with all of them that way. I mean, Bob was that way and still is. And I tell you, he's going to be missed.
Definitely going to be missed.
He's very respectful to the business, too.
Yes, he was.
And the people in it. And it's a very nice kid.
Jeff, I don't mean to cut you off, but I got one more caller that's calling in, and I want to get them online just before we go off, but I appreciate you calling in. And I tell you, it's like I said, fans like you and what Brad worked with, what we all work for. And these guys are remembered, after all these years. But thanks for calling in, Jeff.
All right, no problem. You guys take care.
Caller from Pensacola, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's Finn Sullivan here.
Hey, Finn, what's up?
Right. Hey, not much, Michael. How are you, my friend?
Doing great, doing great.
Well, I tell you what. What's that?
I said, how's your ankle?
Well, it's not doing real well, but we'll be back in the ring within 3 months.
We'll book you with Jerry Oates.
Well, you know, it's beating books with Mike Norse.
Yeah, that's true.
At least he knows how to work. But anyhow, hey, look, it's truly a sad day for our business today. A lot of people have said, you know, that Brad was underrated. He was never underrated by us. We all knew what he was. And it's a sad day. And, of course, our thoughts and prayers out with the Armstrong family, the James family. And this is something that when we lose somebody, I guess, you know, people just don't understand how we feel. But it's a good thing that we can talk and we can reminisce and we can tell stories and we can be together. And I just want to thank y'all for the opportunity and for your show. And let's all get together in March and tell a few stories.
And we will.
And I look forward to seeing y'all in March.
All right, man. Appreciate it, Ben.
Yes, sir.
Elliot.
Yes, sir.
Thanks a lot.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
That was Ben Sullivan or Elliot Wiggins.
I was fixing to say I never heard the Sullivan part, but I thought that was Elliot. I just wanted to.
Yeah, Ben Sullivan was the name Rip Tyler gave him.
Oh, okay.
He worked. His dad, Joel Wiggins, was actually the promoter in the late 70s in Pensacola that was running Tri-States, was the promotion I actually had my first matches with.
Okay.
So anyway, well, guys, we are out of time. I appreciate Ben and Jeff Luce, Bo James, Tom Pritchard. It's good that we're able to laugh a little bit, as bad as this day's been.
Yeah.
I just want to tell every one of you guys, I love you guys, and today's made us realize that we got to tell each other that.
Yes, sir.
We do.
Bo. Good luck with your book.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bowman. I'll try to call you this weekend. I'm actually home for a whole weekend.
Okay, good.
We'll call and bury everybody.
Thank you very much. Tell everybody I will beat them all.
Well, Bill and Joe, I appreciate it. Bobby, as always, we'll get together next week, and hopefully Jerry will be able to be back with us for a little bit longer next week. But we'll get together and see what kind of trouble we can get in then.
Hey, Bobby.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
This is what your song, Friends, means so much.
Yes, it does.
Good night, my friend.
Good night,
bye.
My friend.
Hi, guys.
Good night, Joe. All right.
Talk to you guys later.
So much, my brother.
Bye-bye, yo.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast. Production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.